You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show. Woo!
Everybody, this is Justin. This is the last episode of Grindhouse Messiah until we kick it into 31 days of Halloween mode over on the far side. It's everything's going to be creepy and kooky and blah, 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 blah. And we've got an episode a week dropping of Grindhouse Messiah next month, which will include an episode with our good friend Elby about Singapore Sling. Not exactly a horror movie, but certainly creepy and weird and I don't even know. Makes me feel icky, and I talk about that. I think the episode might be called something like Weird Boners with Elby. So stay tuned for that one. We're going to have an episode with our friend Josh over at Victims and Villains on the Rob Zombie Halloween movies. And we are going to be recording some other stuff this month, as well as an episode we already did with Neil, the director of the Process Church movie, about cults. So it's a really, really fun month of creepy, weird goodness. So please check out the episodes coming up. Reminder that we're on Patreon now, and also that the store with our merch is finally, it's live, but it's going to like really kick off here at the beginning of October when I get some groovy pictures up and I start to promote that stuff, because I've been super duper busy. Blaine would probably tell you that I'm a lazy piece of crap. No, he wouldn't. He's actually too nice about that. I might call him something like that, but he's actually a really nice guy. In other words, I shouldn't talk bad about that guy. He's like my brother from another mother. I should just stop talking and let you listen to this podcast, because it's way better than hearing me ramble, right? Right. All right, y'all. Stay tuned. Enjoy the show. And we're here talking about Six String Samurai and Turbo Kid with our boy Dino from the What and Huh podcast. Check it out.
Everybody, welcome back to our newest episode of Grindhouse Messiah. I am your co-host, Blaine McLaren, and with me is my buddy and co-host, Justin. What's going on, man?
Hey, you know, I'm doing pretty good, man. Kids are back in school, so that's a good thing. Means my wife is going a little less insane. And myself as well. And I can't complain. I've watched a lot of good movies lately. And what about you? Are you watching anything good?
Dude, I've been trying to play catch up with stuff. I keep getting distracted, with the kids back in school. That means my job picks back up, because being in my industry, that means people get out of their house. They start bugging other people because they're mad, because they got to deal with shit and go back to work. So then they rolls down back to me. So I haven't been watching as much, but I've been actually checking out TV. Have you heard that we are in the golden era of television right now?
I've heard that. I mean, I guess I can't read it, except is it really television? Because like I stream it all.
No,
I don't watch anything.
And it's
on
all
television.
A bummer. Like a lot of people who know me know my version of TV is sitcoms. I don't like 13, 14 episodes of 1 hour of depressing shit. And that's what everything is. So I've been trying to check things out. But, yeah, it's all really depressing. But, yeah, man, doing good. Got a lot of cool stuff that I need to watch. I know that we finally got a chance to see Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich. So I've been kind of riding high off that. And you can check out our kind of group review on Farsighted. And speaking of the Farsighted, I'm pretty sure we have one of our special guest this episode is one of our Farsighted Network brethren, Dino. Hey, Dino, how's it going, man?
Going good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So with your last name, how do you pronounce it, man?
It's Gengali. Pronounce every letter. Yeah.
It's one of those things where I have said your last name in my head 1,000 times, but I'm like, man, yeah, no, I was wrong when you said it.
I mean, I've had it my whole life, and no one has ever gotten it right on the first shot. So.
No, that's awesome. But, so today you got us, before we get into the movies, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, the podcast on the network and all that good stuff.
We have a what podcast. Yeah. Basically, you know the fat guy in Jaws?
Yeah.
You know, it's a tiger shark. What? That is where the name comes from. And our topics are about as random as that quote, you know. We range everything from Kiss to Friday the 13th to just about everything right now. We've got the 2 episodes in the can, and we're working on another one. I also have another podcast that we're working on that's called Huh? Kind of keeping with the question theme. And that one is with me and my wife. And she and I are both horror fans, genre fans, heavy metal fans, rockabilly fans. So we kind of talk about our life together. We've got 3 kids, and we're introducing our kids slowly into the genre. You know, we have a son and 2 daughters, and each of them are at different stages of development. So we'll see how long it takes us to corrupt them. But with a what, it's me and my best friend of about 30 years, Andrew. We've known each other since we were about 12 or 13 years old. He was the best man at my wedding. And he lives in California. I live in South Carolina. We grew up in New York together, and it was basically our telephone calls. You know, we'd call each other every week or every 2 weeks and just piss and moan about everything, movies, music, whatever. And one day I said, you know, dude, we got to record these. These are just too damn funny. And he's like, yeah, all right. And then one day I said, Andrew, let's do a podcast. And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, and it was something that we wanted to do for years. We talked about, you know, doing a radio show, you know, back when Pump Up the Volume came out,
right,
in the early 90s. You know, we were like, oh, yeah, we want to be, you know, Harry Hardon, you know, and do, you know, a radio show. And finally, technology caught up to us, you know. So we can do this for real cheap.
Nice. You gotta love things like Skype and all the nice technology that does the work for you. I can't pretend that I don't love that as well. And you said you're from New York. I think in a conversation on Twitter, I caught that you're from Long Island.
Yeah. Born and raised in Long Island. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm born and raised in North Jersey, although I also got out of the greater New York area, city area, and I don't miss most things, although I do miss a really good bagel, and I got a good one earlier this week, so I got to get up there, and I think that's how I noticed that you were from Long Island, because I think you commented, like, oh, man, now I miss Long Island, when I was talking about my bagel.
A bagel and a good breakfast sandwich from a deli.
I love those bagel delis.
During high school, I worked at the corner deli, and man, there was nothing like a breakfast sandwich, you know?
Yeah, man, I think that's what I said. I had a corned beef, egg, and cheese on a on an everything bagel. Oh, it was killer, man. It was all that. I'm starting to get hungry talking about it. But yeah. So being that you're from up there as well, I just got to ask: are you so Giants fan or Jets fan?
Jets.
I'm okay with that, man, because I'm an Eagles fan these days, and I never liked the Giants much. So I'm cool with you wear the right color. Green is good. I'm in. So people always ask me if I was from up there and I didn't like the Giants, why I wasn't a Jets fan. And I just told them, like, I couldn't grow a proper mullet as a kid. So but I jest. So Dino, you brought a couple movies with you today that for us to talk about. Why don't you tell us what movies you picked and what got you thinking about them?
Yeah, I picked the 1997, I believe it was, Six String Samurai, directed by Lance Mungia, who went on, I think he did the third Crow movie after that, and I don't think much else.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think he did the fourth one, which is actually the worst ever. He did Wicked Prayer, I believe, which is although I will say Dennis Hopper as a jive talking pimp is one of my favorite things I've ever seen in my life. So if you, the movie is not necessarily worth watching for that because the rest of it is just that bad. But man, there's something about watching, somebody should do a supercut of just his quotes from the movie and like a nice 5-10 minute, like, supercut. It would probably be like, that'd be a very entertaining deal, but the movie, not so much.
Yeah.
So that's a good one, and then I kind of suggested to pair with it that we would go with Turbo Kid, and you like that idea to kind of go with the post-apocalyptic stuff. And I'm assuming you've seen Turbo Kid prior to this, right?
Yes, I had.
Well, that's good because I've watched it like a million times.
What I thought was cool was, you know, Six String Samurai came out in '97, and if I'm not mistaken, Turbo Kid, I believe, takes place in '97.
Oh, you might be right. That's an interesting catch, and I didn't catch that, but it is somewhere around that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. No. That's 100% right. Yeah. No. I was trying to remember it, and I pulled it up here. Yeah. It takes place in 1997, so we're technically watching two movies that take place in post-apocalyptic 1997. That's pretty fucking rad.
Yeah.
We're only 11 years after, and you know. There's still time. Yep. There's still time for the apocalypse.
Well, I mean, you know, I think the apocalypse might be upon us, but that's a whole other discussion in a different podcast. I believe they call that one Trumpcast. But anyway.
Yeah, that's when you talk about how much you like him. I love that show.
Oh, man. He doesn't actually like him, Dino. It's okay. He's just trying to bait me. So anyway, with that in mind, Blaine, why don't you – we'll start with the earlier movie with Six String Samurai. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that movie's about?
Okay. In the post-apocalyptic world of 1960s Nevada, so that totally destroys what we were saying, that they both took place in 1997. It doesn't, so disregard that. But in the post-apocalyptic world of 1960s Nevada, a rock and roll samurai on his way to Las Vegas takes a young orphan boy under his protection as Death and his metalhead horsemen chase after him. So that's actually a very good, IMDb description. If you're playing at home, you can now take a shot because this was a movie that I always assumed I had seen. Like, I honestly thought that I had seen this movie. So I was like, oh, I was sitting down to watch it. I turned it on. I was like, oh, I remember this. And then quickly realized, no, this is a movie that I had passed, I don't know how many times, at Blockbuster, and always thought, ooh, that sounds cool. And then just kind of didn't pick it up for whatever reason. So for me, having thought I'd seen it, this was a first time watch. And Dino, this is a great thing to bring to the show, man. This is like the most like Grindhouse Messiah kind of movie that there is.
It really is.
I mean, between being this like kitschy 60s nostalgia, this martial arts aspect, as well as this fun, like, rockabilly, psychobilly soundtrack. It was, I mean, something really fun and incredibly unpredictable. And man, our last episode that we did with Ed Travis, we talked a lot about you know, martial arts actors, and talked a lot about Scott Adkins and Jeffrey Falcon, who I never heard of. This guy is incredible. Way, I mean, he kind of elevates everything that goes on in the film. And you know, there's a lot of really, you know, like fun, over the top, kind of almost trauma like excited, you know, performances. He plays the character so well and is so proficient that really, I don't know, I wasn't expecting what I got. So like this was something that I really, really was surprised by, and ended up getting a chance to watch it a few times before we recorded. But yeah, Dino, what got you to pick this, man?
I've been a fan of this one for a long time. I remember reading about it in Fangoria, of all places, which is odd because there's really no gore in the movie. But they did a whole thing on, like, small independent films going back, I mean, probably around 95, 96. And I had a friend of mine who worked for a video store, and he had bought it. And I said, all right, let me put this in. And the first time I popped it in, I mean, I was a fan. Right. You know, I grew up with, you know, Kung Fu Theater, you know. You know, they used to play stuff on Channel 11 in New York all the time, you know. So
WPIX, my friend, WPIX.
11 Alive.
Yeah, baby.
But, I mean, I'm also a musician, too. You know, I play guitar, and, you know, I grew up with, you know, Buddy Holly, and, you know, everyone said you're either an Elvis fan or a Beatles fan, and I always gravitated toward Buddy Holly. So the fact that this guy is essentially Buddy Holly trying to claim, you know, the king of America.
Right.
You know, this is what the story is about. He's going through trying to claim Elvis's throne because there was a nuclear bomb in like 57, I think. And the last place standing was Las Vegas. So Elvis reigned, and then he died, and then Buddy Holly and all these other, you know, guitar players are trekking across the desert to claim the throne. So I'm like, you know, anything that revolves Buddy Holly, you know, playing guitar with a samurai sword, you know, that's in my wheelhouse, boy. So.
Yeah.
And like you said, I mean, the martial art, I mean, this guy is ridiculous. You know, you look at his IMDb, it's as long as, you know, my leg, but it's always, you know, goon number one, you know, bully two, stuff like that, over in Hong Kong or something. And
right.
Really did nothing.
you know what's crazy? I really loved how, you know, in keeping with the Asian martial arts kind of themes in the movie, that the movie was all completely horribly dubbed. I loved the fact that the dubbing was almost, like, it was clearly somewhat intentionally off, and I really appreciated that. Like, I don't know. Like that was just added to the kitsch and the shtick of the whole thing for me.
Yeah, and I wanted to add, when we were talking about Jeffrey Falcon, I ended up doing a lot of digging online and just trying to find out where this guy was, because it looked like after about 1999 or 2000, he just kind of disappeared. And apparently, he's kind of one of these guys, kind of like it sounded very similar to like kind of what Tony Jaa went through, where he just thought he was just so great. And then eventually people just quit working with him because he didn't want to follow any direction. I think he just kind of went off and went and studied as a monk for a little while, and just kind of fizzled out into, I don't know, probably being very wealthy in China somewhere. But yeah, it was a really strange thing, because I was thinking, this guy is so good. Like, because he's also one of these guys, like Scott Adkins, that not only is he good at martial arts, he's charismatic and he can act. So I kept thinking, well, why isn't this guy doing, you know, all these Jason Statham movies that come out at Walmart every week, or, you know, any of these kind of roles? But yeah, apparently the guy just, I guess, really dug himself a little bit more than the next and eventually fizzled out.
Yeah, see, if he was more popular, we'd sit in here watching Jeffrey Falcon, you know, punch a shark.
Exactly. We could have seen him punch a shark.
I mean, I would definitely be interested in that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm pretty interested in watching Jason Statham do it, too, even though I haven't seen it yet. But I'd be really interested in watching this guy do it, especially if he had a guitar slung around, because that's just something about that. It just adds to it. Speaking of guitar and guitarists, I love that Death is Slash. Another ridiculousness in this movie. They basically get a Slash lookalike. Not a talkalike, though, because his voice is ridiculous.
Death metal.
Yeah, and what I also love that he's also death, as in death metal, but like their music's not death metal at all.
No.
And the other guys in his band are like crazy nerdy little. I don't even know, but it's amazing. Like, as a villain, he kind of almost reminded me of like a Power Rangers villain. Like, he's just that over the top ridiculous to me. I, you know, like I said, this whole movie, I think the whole feel of it is just, it's just fantastically cheesy. It hits all the right notes for me. You know, while I don't know that I have a lot of like deep insight about the film, because I'm not sure if there's ever was intention for any true depth of anything in it, it's just a lot of fun. Like, it's just a really fun film.
Yeah, I think it might have started off as a like a college film or something, like a student film. And then he got like a little bit of money behind it and then just kind of added on.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Like, is some of those action scenes, they look like they may have almost been added in after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, whenever he's coming up for a lot of the battles, you see him like coming up, and a lot of times, like, even some of the grain changes in some of the fights. So that would make perfect sense.
And I mean, and surely you picked up on all the, you know, Wizard of Oz imagery in it.
Yeah. You
know, I mean, so we've got the, you know, post-apocalyptic Wizard of Oz thing going on. You know, not only the you know, the little guy, you know, the little person. I don't want to be politically incorrect here. You know, the Follow the Yellow Brick Road, homie. That guy.
Yeah. I think the inappropriate thing would be to call him a cholo midget.
Yes.
Because he is totally. That is exactly.
I can't decide right now. I can't decide right now whether or not, like, that should edit you out or I should just let that slide.
No, but, because this is the
90s. I'm not going to edit it out because he's totally right. I'm not going to edit it because that's totally what he is. He's a stereotype, like, completely. Oh, my God. That character is great. And I also love that, like, he's like, don't leave your kid with me. And then they leave the kid with him, and he, like, takes care of him anyway.
Yeah.
He's like, all right. He's just like, all right, kid, you want some water? Here you go. Like, it's just like, oh, okay. So he's all bravado. Like, he was clearly just actually a nice dude.
Yeah. Which I do love those little strange interactions along the way that kind of played to that Wizard of Oz thing, but, like, when they hit the fan, when they're looking for the wrench or the ratchet, and they come across like this weird like nuclear family that's, you know, of course cannibals. You can tell in like the first 2 seconds. Yeah. But I love that he just ditches the kid with them. He's just like, all right, later.
The Cleaver family.
Yeah, the Cleaver.
Yeah, like, here you go. Here's your dinner. Family. I'm just gonna leave your dinner here with you, and I'm gonna roll. Yeah. Oh my God. And of course, you know, it you know, having not seen the movie until this. Well, last week, I guess it was, I'd had this on my list for a long, long time to watch. And like you, Blaine, kind of thought maybe I'd seen it before. And then I watched it and I was like, nah, I definitely haven't. And like, it clearly, even though I'd never seen it before, it wasn't very long before I kind of knew exactly what was going to happen. And I didn't care that I figured that out early because it didn't matter. Like, it was just so much fun to watch. Like, you know, this isn't a spoiler because it's clear from the beginning to me that, like, he is going to act like he doesn't care about the kid and not care about the kid, and then suddenly at one point he's going to care about the kid. Like, you know, like, it was just, that's going to happen. That's an arc that's going to happen. And I watch it, and of course it kind of happens that way, you know? But it's funny because the way it happens and the way it all unfolds is just so fun and so ridiculous. Like the cannibal, like the, you know, Cholo Midget, like all this stuff that he encounters. And it's just really interesting. And one of the things that, Dino, you brought up when we were talking about what movie to pair it with was the obvious similarities between it and Yoderowski's El Topo. And, I mean, that's clear to me as well. And even if you hadn't said it, I think I would have picked that up pretty quickly. Is that, do you know, does either of you know, if that's a completely intentional thing?
I would, I mean, I'm guessing, I'm spitballing. I would probably say yes, but once again, I mean, just because it's so blatant. I mean, even with the umbrella, you know?
Right. Yeah, that was the big thing to me is that just when he's walking with that umbrella and like that like kind of that same stroll that you get from Jodorowsky in El Topo. Yeah, I mean, I can see because the movie just feels like he's just putting everything he likes in a movie. He was like, I want to make a movie that's like an homage to like. To films like El Topo and then, you know, Blind Swordsman films. Like, it's just, there's so much in there. Plus with like this crazy, you know, like rock and roll angle. So yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a lot in this movie. There, El Topo's hard to get away from, but it's kind of, I guess you could call it like a California El Topo in its own weird way.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to make, and I think you're right. I think he wore his influences on his sleeve. I mean, you know, between El Topo, you know, and like just a lot. You know, you mentioned Wizard of Oz. Clearly, there's a lot of references to that. There's a lot of little homages to a lot of things. You know, like he's clearly a giant Shaw Brothers fan. Period. You know, like he's probably watched every Shaw Brothers film ever. You know, mm-hmm. And you know, and so like the action sequences are all very inspired by that classic kung fu, you know, and that's awesome, you know.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's actually a sensei in California.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think actually. He is.
I mean, if I lived in California, I'd be like, I gotta go take classes just so I can take classes with this dude, man.
Yeah. Oh, another thing I wanted to mention before I forgot about it is how much did you guys love the Russians when
oh my god,
he shows up and he's the Tiger Claw like Russian general. That is something that just made me so happy. Like I was like, okay, so he's meeting up with of course the Russians are the bad guy. In this story, and then when I realized that he's a Tiger Claw expert, that made me so excited.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's just like all the references are just ridiculous. And you know, and you know, bringing up the fact that when I looked up Lance Mungia or whatever, yeah, his name is. The director, and I looked him up and I saw, like we'd said, he directed Wicked Prayer, and I've seen that movie, unfortunately, like I mentioned, and I just have a hard time believing the same guy made these two films.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so blatantly different. Like, this one's a homage to all this great stuff, and this one is not an homage to anything worthwhile ever. You know, I mean, it's just a shame. But
the money spins the same, though.
You're right. Well, and I mean, I guess you know, he's given the opportunity to direct a film starring Ed Norton and Dennis Hopper in the early 2000s. He thought, hey, what could go wrong?
You know how cool that sounded, probably when he was taking the job. They're like, we got Tara Reid. We've got, you know, we've got
right.
Dennis Hopper. Yeah, but then he didn't know he was getting that was when Tara Reid first got all like the really weird plastic surgery too. So she had like She had like the big titty and the little titty, and oh man, that was like the fun. That was like the best era of Tara Reid, because she just looked like a weird like drawing of a person.
But if anyone listening feared, don't worry. The final Sharknado will have Tara Reid in it. I got to read that a few weeks ago. She did agree to be in the final movie.
If I can go off the rails for a second, about 4 or 5 years ago, when Sharknado was kind of, people still seemed to really care about it, she was at a Days of the Dead event. I guess they're to sign autographs. I have never seen someone like nodding out as hard as she was at her table. Her eyes were shut where like the handler had to nudge her every, like, I don't know, for the 15 minutes that we watched her, she nudged her at least 30 times in those 15 minutes.
She had a really long night the night before. She was doing a lot of important work on Sharknado. I'm sure it had nothing to do with the fact that she has significant documented drug and alcohol problems.
No.
Oh, she needs better people around her, man, because that was a bad look.
Man, but Dino, thanks for this recommendation, for bringing this to the show, because honestly, I don't know why I needed a push to watch it, because like I said, it's been on my, but I did somehow, and now it's clearly going to be in my, you know, my collection to go back to a few times. My wife watched the second half of it with me, really enjoyed it. She walked in like, what the hell are you watching? And, I mean, she says that to me 3 to 4 times a week, but, she usually joins in and usually has a good time. You know, and she's like, I think we're going to have to rewatch this so I can see the whole thing. And I was like, score, you know? So it was pretty awesome.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm going to be quite honest with you. The reason why I started doing podcasts, you know, I guess like everybody, you know, for it to be self-serving, you know. this is a film that I've wanted to talk about with just about everybody I've ever met since I've seen it. And there's only a select few that will give it a chance. You know, fortunately, my wife and I, we're on the same page with a lot of stuff. I mean, I had the soundtrack to this, and it was just, you know, we spent years just quoting this movie, you know, whenever I can, you know, and I've shown it even to my kids. I've got a 10, a 7, and a 5-year-old, and they all, you know, like it.
Oh, yeah, and that was one of the first things I thought in my head was, oh, man, I wish I would have known that this was a movie I could just show to my son over, you know, like, I was thinking, he's going to love it. So it's going to be one of those rainy days or sick days at the house where I'm definitely going to be loading this up to show my son, because this is definitely, I mean, you know, usually these aren't the kind of flicks you can show your family, but yeah, man, this one, I was surprised at how pretty mild it was in a good way. I think it keeps that fun vibe going.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, my 9-year-old Cash would definitely vibe this. Mind you, he can handle a little more scares and gore and things. My little one, though, who's not really into as much of that stuff, I think he'd love this too, because it's off the rails, ridiculous fun. It's you know, he tends to sometimes struggle if I'm not watching like a night, you know. He's got ADHD and is the poster child as such. So if it's not like animated fun, he's not always in. But like, I feel like this is basically a live action cartoon. So yeah. I think he's totally could buy in pretty quick. And with that in mind, I definitely think it's one I'll be revisiting with the whole family. But you know what's not kid friendly at all? Turbo Kid. I mean, you know, so the next movie that we're going to talk about, just it clearly is, while it's not a horror movie, was really embraced by horror circles when it started to make the rounds, because it's so excessively gory and violent that it basically has turned into, a movie that the horror community really just has fallen for. And again, another one that really kind of fits our art style here of the Grindhouse Messiah. We really like fun over the top shit, and that's what this one is. So, Dino, you know, when I threw this one out there as a pairing, and then we were kind of bouncing back and forth, you were like, no, I want to do Turbo Kid. Let's do Turbo Kid. You know, what made you want to jump on that one, on this one?
Well, the retro feel, it once again, I'm older than both of y'all. You know, I was raised in the 80s. So the whole 80s neon, you know, rad type vibe, I really dug, you know, the whole retro synth thing going on. So that was something that I definitely wanted to. I had seen it most of the way and had to stop. You know, this was about a year ago. Actually, my buddy Andrew had said, dude, you got to watch this movie. And I said, okay, sell me on it. And he goes, Michael Ironside. And I said, okay, you sold me on it.
So, that's perfect.
So, I mean, what's not to like, you know? I mean, you have blood, gore, you know, post-apocalyptic, Soylent Green references. I mean, you've got everything going on in this film.
Definitely. I mean, to me, when I first saw it, I was like, so this is now my favorite Mad Max movie. So, yeah. It basically, to me, felt like Mad Max on bikes. But unlike Mad Max, the gore, like I said, is so over the top in such a ridiculous way that just, it makes it fun. We talked about this on my podcast before, on this podcast, Blaine is well aware from our discussions. You know, I mentioned my wife before. My wife doesn't always do gore well, especially realistic gore. But if the gore is fun, if the gore is more this over-the-top stuff or stylized in some way, you know, that usually works for her. So, like, you know, recently we rewatched Sin City for the 3,000th time. That works for her because it's stylized gore. Even though I realize if you took the style out of it, it might be one of the most exploitive, awful movies I've seen in my entire life. But when you stylize it, it makes it different, you know? And in this movie, you know, it's that over-the-top fun nature where it feels like, you know, Sam Raimi-style gushing blood, you know? And, oh, God, do I love that. You know? I just love it. Blaine, for those who haven't seen this movie, and I'm assuming you probably still have that IMDb pulled up, can you read us a little brief synopsis?
No, I won't read it. I'm going to do this off the top of my head. You already said it. It's Mad Max on bikes.
You're right, man. I already said it.
Yeah, no, this is right, man. Yeah, I remember. This is one of those things. I remember I had heard like grumblings about it because it was originally the short T is for Turbo, which was one of the when they were letting people kind of compete for the letter T in the first ABCs of death. And
which, by the way, T is for Turbo, significantly better than the film that actually won.
Yeah,
the T,
way better than T is for Toilet. Yeah, it's I like T is for Turbo, but yeah, the producer of ABCs of Death was like, dude, this is awesome. Could you make a 90-minute feature out of it? And that group RKSS they put together, and I mean, so I kept hearing stuff about it. Like the first trailer came out, I was like, okay, this is right up my alley. It looks silly and fun and disgusting. And I remember my brother, his wife and I, we loaded it up on Vimeo as soon as we got the chance. And like immediately I was like, this is good. And what I expected like the fun, like goofiness. I expected, you know, the over the top gore. What I didn't expect was that the movie has like a real heart to it. Even when it's kind of corny and they're trying to go for laughs, it's, I don't know, it feels grounded. Like the character that I always say makes me love this movie, not like it, is Apple. Just because she is. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Apple, like...
All right, true story. Are all three of us just completely in love with Apple? Because I am.
Yeah.
I mean, but as much as, you know, she's the robot in the movie, she is like... She is the actual like heart of that film. Like in my opinion, that movie I don't think it'd be a movie I'd rewatch once a year if Apple wasn't in it. Just because she does, I don't know. Like that's who you kind of attach to. I don't know. It's I think it's one of those really great additions to these kind of post-apocalyptic movies, because I love Mad Max movies, but there's usually no one really to identify with, or anyone that you're ever really invested in. And I like this idea of introducing someone like her that's just like absurdly optimistic, you know, with like this entire like naiveness that's great, juxtaposed with this, you know, in this world where, you know, they're literally turning people into water and, you know, doing these blood sports and all that fun stuff. So yeah, no, I mean, this is really, it's kind of one of those go-to movies when I don't know what to watch. I'm like, I could throw on Turbo Kid and sit there and watch the whole thing through. So no, I'm a big fan. And when we were kind of tossing around what's a pair with Six String Samurai, El Topo, everybody knows it's like a top 10 movie for me. I love it. One of my favorites of all time. I was still pretty excited when Turbo Kid came up, and I was like, yeah, I think I'd rather watch that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, I love El Topo as well. I think it's I'm certain it's my favorite of Yoderowski films, but I always come back to the idea of, I think we just need to do a Yoderowski episode. And so I'm always afraid to like take one of my favorite Yoderowski films and pull it out and whatever. But you know, honestly, like you said, this is just so much more fun. This is just a fun movie. And, you know, with Six String Samurai being also just a really fun movie, this is just like a pairing of films that I don't know how anybody couldn't enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. Have you guys seen the Apple short?
No, I didn't know there was.
There is a short. You know how when they find Apple, she's like talking to the corpse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the story of her and that corpse.
Really?
Whoa. Interesting.
It's on YouTube. I had found it probably about 2 weeks ago. I said, what the hell is this? Yeah, it's enjoyable.
Is it
a live action. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if maybe it was like, wow. I didn't know if it was like panel or something. No, that's awesome. Yeah. How have I not seen this?
Yeah, I think we have extra recommendations today when we get to our recommendation segment, because I have to recommend myself to go get my ass over to YouTube and watch that tonight, and I will. So that's awesome. I know that there is going to be a Turbo Kid 2, which excites me. I also know that RKSS has a couple other things they want to work on first, including a really great film that just hit theaters called Summer of 84, which I kind of have a feeling might be someone's recommendation.
Oh man, no, it's not, but it should have been.
Oh wow, I'm surprised. I thought that was going to be your recommendation later. Oh well, I guess then maybe I'm going to change mine. We'll see. But that said, you know, this movie is, you know, you brought up Michael Ironside as a selling point. How much fun is he in this movie? I mean, he's a phenomenal villain, you know, and we've seen him as villains before, clearly. But oh god, he's just ridiculous in this movie, and just has some really great scenes, including what I love about this film as well is the effects are so much fun. Some of them are clearly cheesy, but they're like intentionally so it makes it okay. You know what I mean?
Oh, like in like a Kill Bill sort of way.
Yeah, or like the lightning bolt, like electricity thing that is shot, and arm cannon thing, and like that stuff. I mean, it's not quite like Life Force level cheesy, but it's fun, and I like when you get to see, especially with this like this 80s vibe to it, you know, this movie has this, you know, it kind of works in that way especially. And I love the effects in this movie, the way they mix the practical with the, you know, the goofy CG that's intentionally kind of goofy. It just really works.
Yeah, I wanted to piggyback after you guys kind of jumped around, but yeah, it's great to see Michael Ironside actually doing something, because he's kind of one of those guys that, you know, he's very prolific. You know, he's definitely cashing in on his name these days, which I'm not going to hate on anybody for that, but you don't always get great performances out of him at this point. And I think this is one of those roles where they're just like, hey man, just swing for the fences, and it works because he goes so far with the character that it really was fun to me because he's one of those guys, man. You're not always sure what you're gonna get, but yeah, no, he nails it in this one. It's just a fun movie. It kind of reminded me a lot of him, you know, like he is in Scanners. a lot of times, you know, I kind of got that vibe, especially when he's like rolling out, you know, his evil plan. And I always think of that scene at the end of Scanners before they do the brain battle, and he's doing that like Bond villain, like, this was all the evil shit that I was gonna do, you know. And he gets a chance to do that a lot in Turbo Kid, and man, I just love it. I have to give credit to RKSS for really, I mean, they cast a really good, you know, set of young actors, as well as some, you know, people like Michael Ironside, both Apple and, you know, the titular Turbo Kid, both really good at selling this strange kind of cornball script. And I was looking through it, and I didn't realize that kid was from Degrassi, which I was trying to place him from the show, but it was pretty, I don't know, man. I was impressed at how well they cast their first, you know, their first feature.
We all know you're a big Degrassi fan with your obsession with Drake and all, so, you know.
I know, man. You gotta watch Degrassi every now and then.
Yeah, of course, when most people like our age talk about Degrassi, they're not talking about the next generation.
That is true. But friend of the show, Cripps, and I, we spent a lot of late nights maybe medically staying up and watching Degrassi all night. Don't leave us with your TV if you got noggin.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, what kind of got me depressed is I watched an episode of Degrassi, and I'm watching, and the people who were the parents on Degrassi were the students on Degrassi when I was younger.
Dude, blew my mind when I finally figured that
I'm
out.
Like, that's gonna save the parents, you know?
Yeah, I was like, holy shit, these are the parents. I was like, just shocked.
Yeah, I haven't watched a ton of Degrassi, but I always think of, you know, I grew up in the ska punk scene, and the Skank and Pickle song, Girl Named Spike, which is about, you know, Spike from Degrassi. And so, like, that's all I ever think about when I think of Degrassi, is I go back to that ridiculous song.
Yeah, it was called Degrassi Junior High when I started watching.
Oh, man, this is called the Grumpy Old Man Cast.
Right? When I was your age, kids, Drake wasn't even born yet. But, oh, man. Well, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot more to say without getting into the specifics of the film, but these two films are both just like I don't know how to boil them down other than say, like, they're really fun. They both have like these journeys where the hero, like, hero's journey kind of movies, and they're both just, it's really hard not to enjoy yourself watching these movies. Turbo Kid, despite the name, not kid friendly, while we discussed have Six Ring Samurai is probably kind of family friendly for most of the people who would listen to this podcast, I'd say, at least. So definitely not as gory, not as bloody, but both of them really have some great effects, some great scenes, some great fights, and, you know, they're just both fun movies.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have anything to add on those, on either one of these, both of you guys?
No, man. Dino, thanks for picking fun movies, man. Like, I was telling off mic with Justin that I was glad that you put together like this fun kind of string of films, and I mean, I don't know, just a fun way to spend an afternoon. It's not a bad double feature, which rarely on this show do we team up stuff that, like, I would spend a day watching those two movies. But yeah, no, that was a blast. So thanks a lot, man.
Oh yeah, my pleasure, man. It was real fun, you know, watching them for the first time and then sitting back and then watching them back to back in the context of talking about them. And then it just got me excited to, you know, get on here and talk with you guys about it.
It's just a lot of fun. And I think that it does excite me quite a bit that we're going to get a Turbo Kid too. I think I trust RKSS to really do it justice again. And it's just, I don't know, when I think of like you said, the two characters, the main ones, you know, being, the, what's her face?
Apple.
And yeah, no. Right. And Turbo Kid, you know, the cat, I really hope that both those actors are back. If they're not, I really don't want to see a sequel. I'm sure they will be. Because they both sell this movie so well.
Yeah, they'll have to take a break from being, like, on all the Canadian TV shows. And, because that's one thing, like, I was going through their IMDb's, I was like, ooh, I've never heard of anything they've done, but I guess this is stuff that people are watching in Canada, so. But no, that's awesome. But hey, we talked about those movies. What's everyone's recommendations this week?
Yeah, so we always kind of wrap up with some recommended films. I tend to always bring up the rear. Maybe I'll start this week. I was gonna bring up something else, but since Blaine's not covering Summer of 84, I'm gonna spend a minute talking about it. Summer of 84 is a really fantastic film that is in theaters now when we're recording, although by the time this goes out in a couple weeks, there's a really good chance it's not out anymore because it's a kind of limited engagement, even though it's around the country. It's not necessarily playing a lot of theaters. But the film is the follow-up for Turbo Kid from these group of directors, RKSS. Different in tone, significantly different in tone, kind of a coming-of-age film that I wouldn't necessarily call horror until the third act, and it makes a really interesting horror turn. It's a really, I'd say tonally feels a little bit like something like a Stand By Me, very Stephen King-ish. Damn if I don't love that coming-of-age style. And I think Blaine might even like this movie more than I do.
Yeah, no, that was, I saw it earlier this year at Chattanooga Film Festival. And I didn't know it was the same guys or anything like that. I was just like, oh, it's 8:00. I will just go watch whatever. And I sat down, checked it out. I was like, oh, RKSS. I still hadn't placed it. Never would I have guessed it was the same people. Because where Turbo Kid is, you know, very like tongue-in-cheek, kind of winky in a good way. Summer of 84 is a very straightforward, like intense thriller that just so happens to take place in the 80s, and it's very much a period piece, and all I could think was, oh man, thank God for Stranger Things, or we never would have got this movie. Even though that they're very different, you could tell someone like came across and was like, do you have anything about kids on bikes in the 80s, you know? And luckily they had a great one kind of already in the bag and ready to go. So I mean, yeah, no, I was really big on it, and like when people are checking it out, like, wait it through. Even if you're getting a little, if it starts to drag a little, like, that ending is brutal, and I think it catches anybody off guard that's, doesn't know what's going to happen. So, yeah, no, I'm a big fan of that movie, and it's most likely going to be at least in my top 15 of the year, somewhere up there.
Yeah, it'll be in my top 15, I think, as well. Dino, what do you got for the lovely listeners as far as a recommendation, and besides these two great movies that they somehow haven't seen them that they should check out?
Okay, I guess I will jump into the post-apocalyptic thing. Have you seen The Ultimate Warrior with Yul Brynner?
I have. That is one I have not thought about for a very long time.
Yes, Yul Brynner and Max von Sydow.
Which, by the way, I learned on last recent episode of Shockwaves podcast that Udo Kier's dog is named Max von Sydow. So Oh, not his dog. Now I think about it, I think it might have been his pony. Either way, it's hilarious. Go ahead.
But this is post-apocalyptic New York. Trying to think what year it's supposed to take place. I think it might be about 2030 or something around that era, but it was made in the 70s.
It was made in 1975 and it takes place in 2012 New York.
Okay. All right. Well, I wasn't.
I'm cheating.
I was a few decades off.
I've
never seen it,
so. Yeah, it's okay.
But, resources are gone, everything. And there are these small communes, living on rooftops and trying to plant gardens. And there's an army of savages, not savages, but, raiders. Run by a guy named Cotton, who's a big dude with red hair. And this commune hires Yul Brynner to protect them. And I'll be honest, if I wanted somebody to protect me and Yul Brynner was around, I would probably pick him, because that man kicks some ass.
He really does.
Dude, 1975 Yul Brynner? Yeah, no, that's badass.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one. Obviously, with Turbo Kid, if you haven't seen Soylent Green, I know, the ending is a cliche, but it's a great film.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, that's one of those movies I think more people just know the line from just the pop culture zeitgeist.
Do you think they don't know the line because everybody in our generation watched The Simpsons and it's referenced on more than one Simpsons episode?
Yes. And one thing I wanted to add on there, I didn't realize looking that up that's a Robert Klaus film, which he is always knocked it out of the park between Enter the Dragon, Game of Death, fucking Battle Creek Brawl. Really, man, that guy has got some great credits, especially like.
Yo, and didn't he do Blaxploitation, Black Belt Jones?
Yes. So that guy, man, he killed it pretty much through the 70s, man. So, like, I gotta revisit the Ultimate Warrior because it's been a long time. That's one of those movies I remember catching on TV.
Yeah.
Dude. Nice. And so, Blaine, why don't you wrap us up here and tell us what you're recommending?
Yeah, my recommendation, because I was like, Samurais. And I was like, Ghost Dog. But I was like, that's way too on the nose because Ghost Dog is basically six-string samurai, but the opposite. It's like this quiet, like subdued, like New York hip-hop version of six-string samurai. It's like if you took all the action out of Six String Samurai and just filled it with, like, nonsense, poetic gobbledygook. But then I was like, oh, that's too on the nose. So I went even more on the nose, and I wanted to suggest the film Der Samurai, a German film from back in 2014, put out by Artsploitation. Such a weird movie. Basically, this policeman, he's like, going through this town, like researching these wolf attacks that are going on throughout this like kind of small German village, and finds out that not only is there a wolf, but there's also a cross-dressing psychotic samurai stalking him. And it is completely over the top insane, incredibly violent, but also has this real strange tone. The director, who I am kind of blanking on, Till Kleinhardt is his name. He's been very prolific in the queer, like German queer cinema, and it kind of follows this line of like sexuality and gender, and it feels like if David Lynch directed a modern samurai film about coming to terms with your sexuality. It is completely bonkers, so weird. But it's really a great film. And I know with Artsploitation, it's a lot of times it's a lot of promise. You see some cool shit. But this is one of the ones that I think really they undersold and when you see the final product, you'll see why that film was distributed by them, because it's very much both. It's very exploitation, very, very martial arts and samurai heavy, but also falls just as in line with a with, you know, the, you know, as a kind of a traditional art film, you know, slow German, you know, pretty film. But yeah, no, I think it's a movie that, you know, if you want to watch something a little heavier, but still with some great violence and action, it's worth checking out. Have either of you checked that out before?
I have not. It's on my queue on Shudder right now.
Oh, it's on Shudder? Nice.
It is, yeah. Although I read somewhere that the Shudder version isn't the complete uncensored version, so I don't know if that makes a huge difference or not.
Oh, man, you're going to miss those dicks.
Yeah, well, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it, but now that I know it's on Shudder, I will.
Oh, no, man, I've kind of got myself jazzed up about it again. I might turn that on when we get done.
Nice. And I mean, but you're gonna watch the version with all the dicks.
All the dicks. Don't you hide
all the dicks.
Don't you hide dicks from me. I'm here
well,
for the dicks.
On that note, it might be time for us to go. Dino, thanks so much for coming by. It surely won't be the last time that you know, you join us, and hopefully we could come join you on your podcast sometime. I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that despite the fact that I kind of loathe the Friday the 13th movies, I actually really liked your episode on Friday the 13th. So I listened to that whole episode despite the fact I don't even like Friday the 13th. So I think that's pretty positive. So keep up the good work, man. Keep up the good work. We definitely are enjoying having you on the network. So thanks for joining us, man.
All right. Thank you.
And Dina, where can they find you and your podcast?
Okay, you can find me on this little thing called the Farsighted Network. all around. You can find me on Twitter at a what podcast. That's three A's in a what. Also, we've got a Facebook page and a Facebook group that just got started. So, yeah. A what?
Very cool. A-W-A-H. And we'll put all those links. Yep, and we'll put all those links here in the show notes, so that you definitely can check all that out, and definitely should go check out this podcast. It's a lot of fun, and definitely if you like listening to Blaine and I, just two dudes that like to banter and talk. These guys are like that, except they've known each other for friggin' ever, and it's clear that they're really having a good time with you.
Yeah, no.
Each other. So. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, Dino, thank you so much, man. No, you're fucking love the show. It's a lot of fun. I'm hoping that we get that episode 3 we've been promised. But, yeah, no, thank you so much for coming on. And, man, I think it's about time to get out of here. What do you guys think?
I think so.
Yeah, I think all right. So.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in this this episode of Grindhouse Messiah. It was a blast. We love you guys all, and we will see you all next time. Peace. Thank you.